Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Whether you're a brand, large business, small business, or an individual, you need customers. And the chances are some of your potential customers are probably listening to this podcast right now. From history...
When Napoleon led Boulogne for a year...
Politics...
If that person is poor, it's a bad neighbourhood. Then you have the disproportionate police brutality, which is meted out instantly at people of colour.
Culture...
Had they written it that Chris called an ambulance for hours straight away, we wouldn't have learnt about the severity of alcohol withdrawal either. Well done to the writers. Thank you for making a wonderful podcast, but I'd give Rotherham a miss. Very.
The Rotherham Tourist Board.
Geekdom.
The flag is a graphic symbol, not a verbal symbol. You know, why don't we just write France on the flag? I mean, we laugh when you think of putting a country's name on a flag.
Society or music.
Young people began to turn away from their parents' ethics and their style of dress. And they began to dance to a new type of music.
Royfield Brown's podcasts are downloaded just under 100,000 times a month. So putting your message here could well be worth it. If you have something to sell or promote, why not email royfield@gmail.com and hear your product or service promoted.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, Anna.
If country borders and grids can fascinate you, and state names intrigue you, if atlases, globes, city plans, subway maps, and of course, world maps are your thing, if you can name the capital city of Namibia, and if you get giddy about flags, you are in the right place. This is Map Corner, a podcast about the love of maps brought to you by Royfield Brown and Claire Asprey. Now, on with the show.
Hello and welcome to Map Corner. I'm Royfield Brown, who's 37.8 minutes north and 122.3 minutes west, which puts me back in Oakland, California. And with me is Claire Asprey. Claire, where are you today?
Surprise, surprise. As ever, I'm at 52.1 degrees north, 0.5 degrees east in Bedfordshire, UK.
This is Map Corner, the podcast dedicated to the love of maps and to all things cartophilic. So if Peters is your projection, you're in the right place.
And, this month we are talking to Father Bill Miller, who's an Episcopal priest. We'll be talking about spiritual journeys following the publication of his book, The Last Hallelujah, which is about his 5,000-mile road trip with his sociable dog. And I'm sure we'll get on the chance to talk about all sorts of other spiritual and pilgrimages, including musical pilgrimages, potentially, because I think you're a big jazz fan as well.
Indeed, yes.
We have part two of Andy Gladwin's audio postcard from that most evocative of British strips of tarmac, the M62. Now, we need you to review us on Apple iTunes. We don't have enough. So I'm looking at you, Rebecca. Write us a review on Apple iTunes. But not only Rebecca, but anybody else who enjoys our output. Because the more reviews that we actually have, the more people will then listen to the podcast.
And again, we're recording this live on Zoom with our Map Corner listeners. And if you want to join in the next broadcast, do join the Facebook page to get the group details of the next show and the login.
Now, normally we record the first Saturday of every month, which is 6 p.m. UK time, which is 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific. But first, we're going to go to our to the man of the moment. It's Father Bill Miller. He wrote somewhat of a travelogue, a homage to wandering with his pooch. Father Bill, why the reason for the book?
Well, I've been blessed to travel a bit myself and live in some wonderful places in the world. And I found myself living on the beautiful island of Kauai in Hawaii. I grew up in Texas, lived in Chicago for a while. And as I said, I have been blessed to travel to many parts of the world. And I've learned a lot and I continue to learn. But one of the things I pay attention to as I travel is the beauty of creation, and particularly our animal friends, whether I'm in Africa or Hawaii. And I met a wonderful dog in Kauai. He had been living at the Humane Society. And I met him a number of years ago when I first moved there. I didn't have any social network to speak of. And I went to the Humane Society, and there was a sign on the cage in which the critter was hiding. And it said Airedale. And I happen to be a big fan of Airedale Terriers. They're among my favorite dogs. I had a couple of them when I lived in Texas and wrote about one of them in my first book. But this guy immediately connected, and we became best buddies and had lots of adventures in Hawaii. And then about 5.5 years ago, we had the opportunity to move to Louisiana near New Orleans, have a lot of musician friends here. There are lots of very fine beasts and humans who live in these parts, and a few alligators as well. And who knows what's in the swamp. But Willie and I moved here, and life was good for us. And back in November of 2017, he was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And his first symptom was that he wouldn't eat. And here in New Orleans, we know that there's something wrong when a person will not eat, because the food for humans and canines alike is absolutely delicious, and you can't resist it. But Willie resisted. He was diagnosed with a terminal cancer, and he was actually only given a few months to live. We did some medical procedures, and I started him on a very healthy diet. And, he was surrounded by love, and he continued to live. And we decided that in the summer of 2017, we would go on a road trip together, because when your best friend is dying, you want to be able to spend time with them. So we got out a map and we plotted our itinerary, and we had a good friend in Las Vegas, and we knew we would start in New Orleans and end in Las Vegas, from swamp to desert. And share his message that miracles are possible when you're surrounded by love and care, and share his story that the important things in our lives are our relationships and spending time with those that we love, and being kind and compassionate to the planet and all those who inhabit it. And before we knew it, we had not only A and Z, but every letter in between, and had invitations to stop throughout Louisiana, Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Arizona, and then finally ending up in Nevada. And it was such an extraordinary journey that we shared together, because we saw all sorts of human beings come together and embrace a positive cause and sort of rally around Willie and his animal friends. And we raised a lot of money for animal shelters and humane societies. And I knew as we were traveling that this would likely become a book. So that did become a book. It's called The Last Hallelujah, Tales from the Trail. And came out back in October. Things are a little different these days in terms of book tours and road trips, but we've been able to connect with folks via Zoom and other technological opportunities. So thanks for having us.
In terms of your road trip, and we're a map loving community here. So when you were planning your trip, what were the things that you were looking to achieve? Because there's more than one way to get from A to B, isn't there? So
yes.
What was it that drove the route that you chose? And yeah, what are the kind of memorable kind of points along the way?
We really didn't know what sort of response there would be. This crazy priest and his dog are off on this road trip, and the dog has terminal cancer, and they want to share some dog stories and help their animal friends. And so I simply put that message out there via social media, and literally within a matter of days, we had about 24 opportunities, and we heard from bookstores, breweries, restaurants, humane societies, animal shelters, churches, schools. So we plotted our itinerary according to the invitations that came in. And if it was within striking distance, we added them to our itinerary. So we spent a lot of time in Texas, from Houston to Austin to Dallas, up to Oklahoma City, Tulsa, across the Texas Panhandle in Lubbock, and then throughout New Mexico, Cloudcroft, Alamogordo, Albuquerque, over to Flagstaff, and then finally ending in Las Vegas. And the memories were really, really quite extraordinary to see how many people wanted to celebrate Willie's life and his story of survival, and also help animals in their various towns. So lots of great stories came from the adventure.
I mean, there must be so many things you've done along that route. So what is it that you will, you know, especially remember, or what is it that you took from it? Because you had a message that you wanted to do. So where do you feel that message had the most impact, I guess, on the way?
Yeah, it was interesting. I think one of the most memorable days for us was actually the 4th of July, which is a fairly important day here in the United States. And we had heard from a brewery in a small town in Texas called Salado, Texas. And their story was really a story of the community coming together to value the opportunity to be together. And they had to change the town laws. And it was really a grassroots effort to create this place. And perhaps similar to the atmosphere of a pub in England, it became a great gathering place for the community. And so they decided to open on the 4th of July and open their doors to Willie and to me and to the community. And I just remember looking out on that sea of humanity, and it was a wonderful microcosm of the diversity of America. There were all kinds of people, all ages, all animals, including a number of canines, children, seniors, and everybody was there having a good time, being in community, and celebrating animals. There were some other places that you might predict. New Mexico is a state of rare beauty, and being in the mountains near Cloudcroft was really extraordinary. And the southwest part of the United States is just stunning. And it's really great. It was really great being with a dog who's experiencing sensory overload as we traveled. There are so many sights and scents to uncover and to discover. And I think being with Willie made me much more mindful of my surroundings and the beauty of the Southwest and unexpected places. For example, the Panhandle of Texas is not particularly a tourist destination. The Llano Estacado is a vast mesa. When I told people we were going to stop in Lubbock, they extended their condolences, and that actually turned out to be an extraordinary place that we visited. The community came together. The church where we were actually had a cemetery for their animal friends, and it was a celebration of the theology of St. Francis, and it was just a beautiful event. It was actually a sold-out event, and so Willie sold out three events. He sold out two in Texas and one in Las Vegas. You know, you just never know. I think one of the stories I have in the book is called Lubbock or Leave It. And I quote John Lubbock, who was not from Texas. He was from a different part of the world. And he said, what we see depends mainly on what we look for. And I think over the course of that adventure, you know, some things were quite overt and obvious. It was kind of like living on the island of Kauai. You're surrounded by beauty. You can't help but pinch yourself and open your eyes and see the lush green mountains and the beauty of the Pacific Ocean, the magnificent waterfalls. And the wide open and vast desert and mountain spaces of the Southwest are like that as well. But there were definitely some surprises along the way. And I credit Willie for helping me discover those.
So if you're traveling with an animal who's experiencing it all as a very new thing, it, like you say, it makes you more aware and present around it. Was that part of the idea of the journey? Because I'm really interested in the concept of, well, pilgrimage, for want of a better word. But actually, it doesn't, there are some very established pilgrim routes, but actually any journey can be a mindful journey when we are present in it or we're noticing well. And what does it mean to travel mindfully?
Yeah, you know, pilgrimage is such an important part of every spiritual tradition. And if we're traveling mindfully, then a pilgrimage can be done anywhere. It could be done around the block, in my backyard, where all of my dogs like to frolic.
These days it'll have to be, because we're all in lockdown.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, I lead a few traditional pilgrimages, and I also lead some non-traditional pilgrimages. I lead one to the sacred island of Molokai in Hawaii, which was not only the island where the first Polynesians settled, it really gave birth to Hawaiian culture and is still considered the most Hawaiian of all of the islands. It's just a beautiful place. But it was also made sacred by the work of St. Damien and St. Mary Ann, who Damien, of course, is from Belgium. Mary Ann was from New York, and their work with those with Hansen's disease on the Kalalau Peninsula, Kalapapa Peninsula, and the churches that Damien built by hand, you can still go there and pray in those churches. So I lead a pilgrimage there. I lead music pilgrimages. I have one coming up from Memphis through the Mississippi Delta all the way to New Orleans. We've been hoping to do it now for about 18 months, but it keeps getting postponed. And I have other traditional pilgrimages that I lead to Israel. And also, I've done a couple of baseball pilgrimages here in America. Some of our baseball stadiums are truly sacred sites. And I've taken groups to Wrigley Field in Chicago and what used to be Comiskey Park on the south side of Chicago, Miller Park in Milwaukee. So really, I think Willie and I were traveling mindfully, and we were also hoping to connect with people. I think connections are a big part of spiritual pilgrimages, connecting to creation, connecting to our fellow human beings and to all created beings. And Willie was a pro at that. He ended up living not for 3 months, but for 18 months. And as soon as we would arrive in any context, he would begin to work the room and connect with people and make them feel very much a part of what was happening. I don't know that there are any creatures who demonstrate unconditional love and forgiveness and all of those important spiritual qualities better than our dogs. And Willie was particularly skilled at such things. So, I've even had people who have read the book or people who attended one of our events on, we call it the Last Hallelujah Tour. I've had people ask me if we might turn that into a pilgrimage and literally go back to the places that Willie and I visited. And I had planned when I released this book to do a book tour in along that same trail. And of course, that's not possible right now, but maybe in the summer or in the fall of this year, we can embark on that pilgrimage.
I like that little pun about embarking. Well done.
Yeah, can't help it.
The ideal thing to start a hallelujah, hallelujah tour. You mentioned a few minutes ago the 4th of July and starting in New Orleans, which prompts me to come out with one of my very few New Orleans anecdotes that I have. The first time I was in your great country, sir, was 1996, and I was there for 4th of July. The scene at the big open-air mall was utterly amazing. I saw about 3,000 Americans of all shapes and sizes. Well, it was New Orleans, so they were a little bit big, to be fair, all dressed up in red, white, and blue. And after they sang the Stars and Stripes, they were all dancing in unison to YMCA. It was the most amazing thing, the most amazing thing. You're somewhat of an unconventional father, aren't you, Father? You know, I was expecting some kind of dog collar and whatever. There you are in your open neck shirt, hair all tussled, looking a bit hip and cool. Are you a modern day St. Francis of Assisi? You know,
well, you know, I think my dogs think that highly of me. I'm not sure that my human friends would agree. But, you know, there are a lot of things that St. Francis has left for us to ponder that are incredibly important for our world right now. When I visited Assisi several years ago, I had always, for many years, loved animals and loved to help their cause. But I remember kneeling at Francis' gravesite, just sensing some sort of a call to play a very small part in his hopes and dreams for the world. And all of the dogs who have come into my life apparently have been sent to me because they all come with a story. I'm a writer, I'm a storyteller, and knowing them and loving them and being loved by them has given me an opportunity to share their stories. I live in a house with one beautiful wife and six beautiful dogs right now. We have six dogs, four of them are rescue dogs, and we have dogs who were rescued in Hawaii, one from Las Vegas, one from Louisiana. You know, we think that sharing their stories does make the world better. Each one of them has a really important story to tell, from Sinbad, my guy who was rescued in Hawaii, to Mahalia Jackson, Queen Lilio Kalani, my female pit bull, who's from New Orleans via Las Vegas. Waylon Jennings is my most recent dog from Kauai. His full name is Waylon Wailua Jelly Roll Jennings. And Wailua basically means two bodies of water. Willie, my first dog, was Willie Nelson. This dog is Waylon Jennings. If you know much about American music, you might know Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings. Jelly Roll Morton, of course, was the great New Orleans musician. Some say he was the founder of jazz. He would say that about himself. Historians debate that, but he certainly left us a rich musical legacy. And, you know, all of these dogs, I think, represent some really important places and people and have important stories to share.
Why do you think that in the Abrahamic religions that to travel, you know, to go on a pilgrimage is so important? It seems that it's kind of key to, it was key to the dissemination of the early church, you know, St. Peter and St. Paul both left the Holy Land and went off to Rome. But why do you think that is such an important part of Christianity, early Christianity?
I think one of the things that I share with my spiritual community is that in the spiritual traditions and really any type of spirituality, stasis is really not an option. I mean, there must be growth, there must be evolution, there must be change, there must be transformation. The spiritual life really is a journey of discovery. We never quite arrive. And I think it's the perhaps some expressions of spirituality that assume they have arrived and have their feet planted a little too firmly in place and a little too certain that they have traveled as far as the Creator calls them. I think that's where we get into trouble, that our spiritual lives are an ongoing opportunities for discovery. And I know on my own travels, I've learned so much about myself, about faith, about all of the spiritual traditions that enrich us as human beings. And, you know, that's just such an important image, that journey, even in traditional pilgrimages where we think about walking our prayers. There's something about moving that that connects us with one another and with our higher power.
That's a beautiful way for us to have a little bit of a pause, Father. Last month, you had the first part of Andy Gladwin's epic, so epic we had to divide it into two, a magisterial audio postcard of his journey on the M62. According to him, it's Britain's only coast-to-coast motorway. Well, that's not according to him, it's according to Wikipedia too. But according to him, it's all the better for the fact that it doesn't go to my hometown of Birmingham. Here is part two of Andy Gladwin's fantastic audio postcard.
Hi, I'm Andy Gladwin. My quiz prize from the last podcast was to send an audio postcard. So this is from a place that's played an important part in my life. This is my audio postcard from the M62 motorway. Without a doubt, the nation's finest motorway. The M62 is a motorway that runs across the north of England from Liverpool in the west at 53 degrees 41 minutes north, 2 degrees 90 minutes west, through to Hull in the east at 53 degrees 71 minutes north, 0 degrees 69 minutes west. So just beyond Stotthold Farm, you come to Scammonden Bridge. This is where the engineers had to cut through the hillsides. They removed 5 million cubic yards of rock, which they then dumped in the valley on the other side and created Scammonden Reservoir. The motorway runs along the top of the dam there. So this was real record-breaking stuff at the time. So it's the first time a motorway had run across the head of a dam. The bridge at Scammonden, when it was built, was the longest single-span non-suspension bridge in the world. And the dam at Scammonden is the largest earth-filled dam in Europe. So it took 5 years to build, and when it was finally completed in 1970, it finally linked the eastern and western sections of the motorway. So officially opened by the Queen in 1971. The motorway then drops down into West Yorkshire, so it runs past Huddersfield and Halifax. And at this point, I can't talk about motorways without talking about service stations. So there are four official service stations on the M62. There's Burton Wood, Birch, Hartshead Moor, and Ferry Bridge. I spent many happy hours at all of these service stations, although I regret to say they're not amongst the nation's finest service stations. But what I would say is if you're travelling westbound and you stop at Hartshead Moor service station, take a moment to find the memorials there. So there's memorials commemorating the 1974 coach bombing, which took place on the motorway just by the service station. So the service station acted as emergency centre and sort of medical centre and 12 servicemen and the families lost their life in that bombing. So the memorials commemorate that incident. So take a moment to find those and have a look. The motorway then travels through what's known as the heavy woolen district. So there's a clue in the name here. So this was a centre for textile manufacture, sort of specialised in the production of heavyweight woolen cloth, ropes, and the manufacture of shoddy and mungo. So you then pass past Bradford and past Leeds. You go through the Tusky Triangle, which is a centre for the production of forced rhubarb. So at one point, 90% of the world's forced rhubarb was grown in the 30 square miles between Leeds and Wakefield. And further east, at Pontefract, which used to be a centre for the growth of licorice and the manufacture of sweets. And there's still a Haribo factory by the motorway at Pontefract. I haven't grown licorice for over a century commercially, so that's long gone now. You then get to the Lofthouse interchange. This is where the M1 crosses the M62, so you then travel south down the M1 to London. Again, this is another notorious travel black spot. From here, you travel through what was the eastern part of the Yorkshire Coalfield. So at the time, this was full of collieries. When I was a kid in the 1970s, this stretch in my imagination was nothing but collieries and slag heaps and power stations. It had its own unique smell, which I guess was from the power stations, which were all burning coal back then. So the collieries have long gone, as have most of the slag heaps, and the ones that remain have been landscaped. It now looks actually quite green and bucolic, so completely different to how it was. The power stations are still there though, so you'll see Ferry Bridge, Egborough and Drax from the motorway. They're minus a few cooling towers because they're partly decommissioned now and no longer burn coal, so it's all multi-fuel and biomass now, so times have moved on. He then onto the final stretch of the motorway, which was completed in 1976 when the bridge over the River Ouse was completed. So this is at Goole, and at this point the motorway is only 2 to 3 metres above sea level, so it's now the lowest motorway in the country. Now, as a kid, I was scared stiff of going over the Ouse Bridge, convinced that we'd be blown off and that would be the end of us. In fact, it still does give me the willies a bit, to be honest. The motorway then moves on to North Quay, where it officially finishes, and it becomes the A63 and it runs on through into Hull. So I thoroughly recommend, if you're in the north of England, do come check out the M62. Definitely worth a road trip. So forget Route 66 or the Pacific Coast Highway. Take a trip across the M62. But if half a day and 107 miles across the country doesn't feel like much of a road trip, just to put it into its wider context, the M62 forms part of Euroroute E20, which runs from Shannon in the west of Ireland through to St. Petersburg. And if that's not epic enough for you, then you could try the E22, which runs from Holyhead in Wales through to Isham in western Siberia, where you can then catch the Trans-Siberian Railway and travel on to Vladivostok. So I hope you enjoyed that whistle-stop tour through the north of England. And as I say, if you are in the this part of the country, do come check out the motorway. You won't regret it.
Thank you for that, Andy. Now, this is the time, folks, where if you are of not only of a religious bent, but if you've ever wanted to go a travelling, it's a time to ask a question to our Father Bill. I'm going to start this off by saying, obviously, you got the message out that you're going on this tour. Did you use social media?
We did use social media, and that was how a lot of people discovered that Willie and I were on the tour. A number of news outlets picked up Willie's story. They were really intrigued by it. When we were in Tulsa, it was kind of a last-minute event, and we had a Saturday morning event at 10 a.m., and when Willie and I showed up at the church at 9 a.m., there were four people standing at the door of the church who had driven 2.5 hours to meet Willie. They were there to meet Willie, not to meet me. I admit that. I acknowledge that. One of the major newspapers in Las Vegas had picked up on the story, and it interviewed me. I think we were probably still in New Mexico when they interviewed me. When we got to Las Vegas, a woman literally ran down the hallway of the church, clutching her newspaper with Willie's photo in it, screaming, "Where is he? Where is he?" And he really became a sensation of sorts. And what's not to love, right? I mean, a dog who's overcome the odds and who's just being a dog, really. And all dogs are extraordinarily special. But Willie was truly one of those one in a million critters who was just pure love. And people sensed it as soon as he walked in the room.
Would you say what one of your spiritual lessons was like understanding the humility of being a very, very clear second fiddle to your dog?
Yes. There's no question that it is very humbling to acknowledge that each one of your dogs is much more famous and popular than you will ever be. And that's certainly the case for me.
You said beforehand that American music is really central to one of your loves and passions. Please tell me that you marked when you were 24 hours from Tulsa. Please tell me that that was not lost on you.
Well, I will, of course, tell you whatever you want to hear.
I'll tell you what. Fiona Powell has a question. Hello, Fiona. Unmute yourself. Ask your question.
Hello, I'm coming to you from the banks of the Susquehanna River in Pennsylvania. Father, only 15 miles from Williamsport, the home of Little League. So if you ever want to come and visit the home of Little League, I will give you a very warm welcome here.
Very good.
Pilgrimage has been an important part of my life, most of my life. And I'm a folklorist and storyteller. I went on my first great walking pilgrimage when I was 16 along the St. Michael route from Cornwall all the way to Kent, which was quite the experience. It took me a number of months. And I plan to do that pilgrimage again in a few years. And I have led some smaller pilgrimages and some car pilgrimages. I try whenever I travel for many miles to do a thoughtful travel. I frequently visit my daughter who lives in Georgia, and I try to do that route because it's quite a long route for those of you who are in England. It's a terrible drive. But if you stop off in Virginia and in North Carolina and South Carolina and around Washington, D.C., and pick out historical or notable places, or at one time libraries, it can be quite a pilgrimage. As you said, any journey can be a pilgrimage. The one thing that disappoints me when I speak to people who are interested in pilgrimage, particularly from the United States, is when they talk about wanting to do a pilgrimage in the British Isles, which I perfectly understand, and then say to me, and sometimes on social media, what a pity we don't have any sacred spaces in America. It makes me weep. Can you talk about the sacred spaces of the United States?
Yeah. In Celtic writings, there was the concept of the thin place. Places that are so sacred and so special that the veil separating heaven and earth, the temporal and the eternal, is so sheer you can literally reach out and touch the other side. When I teach classes here in Louisiana, I ask people that question: What are some of the thin places? What are some of the sacred spaces near us? It's really extraordinary. For music lovers, they will frequently name a favorite jazz venue or one of the old recording studios in New Orleans. We have a beautiful chapel here at Christ Church in Covington. There were a group of folks from England who actually started the church that I serve, and the chapel was built in 1846. It's a very simple wooden structure that is breathtakingly beautiful, and it really hasn't changed over those almost 175 years. And when I ask that question to my people, a number of them will say our historic chapel is a sacred space, a sacred place. When I lived on the island of Kauai, there were so many beautiful sights. It was like living in a thin place. And I think sometimes when we're surrounded by such beauty, we, you know, become sort of inured and we're not really paying attention anymore. And so sometimes I think it is helpful to be just to simply be intentional about, you know, what happened here. You know, some people might think the Mississippi Delta is a pretty bland part of the world, and some really terrible things happened in the Mississippi Delta. On the other hand, there are, you know, there was some extraordinary music that developed in the Mississippi Delta. And if you go there with an open heart and an open mind, I think that some real transformation can happen. And when we do the baseball pilgrimage, and I was intrigued with the Little League option, so thank you for that. I'll definitely keep that in mind. There's a wonderful book written by the former president of New York University, I think, or maybe Columbia. The premise of the book is that baseball is a sacred sport. And, you know, if we're paying attention and, you know, simply viewing it through that lens, we'll be able to see it and appreciate it. You know, many of our buildings in the United States are not nearly as old as those across the ocean. We tend to downplay the power what we experience here. But I can tell you, if you stood at the edge of the Grand Canyon, or you've been to Yosemite or the Rocky Mountains, or, you know, any number of places, even the swamps of Louisiana are really magnificent if you're paying attention and you're open. You know, just being intentional and being open makes all the difference.
I should have mentioned I am a Celtic Christian. You might have guessed that.
Outstanding. Wonderful.
And this is a very thin place, the Susquehanna River. It's extraordinary. And I live in an area that the Native Americans called Chillisquokee, which means land of the white swan. And the swans still come here every year to migrate. And I'm always so moved when they do. You know, people talk about America being a new country, and in some ways it is, but it isn't. It's an ancient land. Mm-hmm. And every year when they come here, they remind me of how old they are. Mm. So that was lovely. Thank you.
Sure.
You've really made me think about times when I've journeyed, and it's been the time that really springs to mind was taking my children to Jamaica for the first time. So it's 2007. Mm. So my son was 6.5, 7. My daughter was like 3.5. And we went to my father, their grandfather's village. It was one of my first ever memories was going in 1974 to my father's village. And then to take my children there to share one of my first ever real memories, to see them in this village, and then to go to the family plot and to see there was a Brown who died in 1848. It was incredibly moving, you know, and it was a personal pilgrimage. You know, when you watch these nature programs, you see salmon fighting to go upstream. You go, that's kind of crazy. You know, why don't you just chill out downstream? You know, because you know what's going to happen, you get upstream. But I realized that I had one of my most profound moments as a parent when I actually was a salmon and I took my children to the place where their forebears had actually been born. Just before we move on, is there anybody who's got any stories about a personal kind of pilgrimage, a personal journey that they could share before we move on? Because I must admit, I've come over all peculiar.
Yeah, I was going to say the church I help run is St. Francis and St. Clair. So where I grew up, every Easter Monday, we'd go on a pilgrimage to Guildford Cathedral from all those churches in the Diocese of Guildford. And the Pilgrim's Way runs across North Down. So we'd all join the Pilgrim's Way. And you get sort of groups of people getting more and more as you got closer and closer to the cathedral. You get bigger and bigger groups. But I think on pilgrimage, it's not the actual travelling. It's more the people you meet along the way. I think that's what's important about a pilgrimage. And BBC's had quite a few programmes now about people going on pilgrims of diverse people they just put together to go on the pilgrimage. And it's interesting to see how they get on, they change, they talk about their faith, how it changes. And I think that's what pilgrimage is all about.
Yeah, you just reminded me of a really powerful connection that I made on a pilgrimage. And it is about those connections. I ask pilgrims on whatever pilgrimage I'm leading to go with an open heart and an attitude of gratitude. And then it's extraordinary what may happen. I was on the Camino de Santiago in Spain a few years back. And as you're walking, you tend to see the same people every day and you begin talking to them. And I became friends with a family from Cape Town, South Africa. A couple of years later, I found myself in Cape Town, South Africa. I had been in Zambia and went over to Cape Town and visited this family. The daughter of the family has a real interest in animals, particularly animals who need help in some of the impoverished communities of Cape Town. I think I had just come back from the Hallelujah tour with Willie. And I told her about the Hallelujah Foundation, which I started in memory of Willie. And she said, I want to do the same thing in Cape Town. And would you allow me to be your partner? And so Willie's Hallelujah Foundation has a partner organization in Cape Town, South Africa. You can Google them. They're doing magnificent work with animals in Cape Town. And that connection, which was the result of a pilgrimage I went on with my dog, but that connection happened on a traditional pilgrimage. And it was all about being open and making a connection and sharing our hopes and dreams for the world with other people. And you just never know where it might lead us. I had no idea that it would lead us to having a partner organization in Willie's memory in Cape Town doing good work. So
That's great. Obviously, we have more in common than what divides us, and I'm sure that that's been one of your core messages. But do you find you get a different crowd on a baseball pilgrimage compared to a religious pilgrimage, compared to a musical pilgrimage, or like, you know, you attract the same kind of crowd across all three, or are they quite distinct?
You know, it's interesting. I've had people come on the baseball pilgrimage who knew nothing about baseball. They were just curious as to, you know, how this was going to work. And they wanted to learn, you know, they wanted to learn about this great pastime. I think if we're curious, we're going to be interested in all kinds of things. I mean, certainly there were some devout baseball people on our baseball pilgrimage, and the music pilgrimage is the same thing. People who trusted me and wanted to learn more about Hawaii came on our Molokai pilgrimage. Sometimes the people you would least suspect show up and become the most ardent learners, you know, on the pilgrimage. But they have been really wonderful, and I think all of us have learned a lot from one another and from the people in the place.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You know what we should do, everybody? We should take five and have a little bit of some quiz action. As seasoned watchers or listeners of this podcast will know, it's our Claire that fiendishly devises these questions. I'm going to say these are extra specially fiendish this month. I only got three of these right. The rest, pure guesses, pure guesses. If you can beat three, right, well done. Now, Father, a lot of these questions are of a religious bent. So if you don't ace this, no place for you in the afterlife with the big man upstairs, sir. All right, so first question is pilgrim routes. What is the most popular route on the Camino de Santiago, which finishes at Santiago de Compostela in Spain? Is it A, the French way, B, the Northern way, or C, the original way? Let me try and attempt the question again. Pilgrim routes. What is the most popular route on the Camino de Santiago, which finishes at Santiago de Compostela in Spain? Is it A, the French way, B, the Northern way, or C, the original way? Question number two. Again, pilgrim routes. How many temples feature along the route of the temple circuit in Japan? Is it A, 66, B, 77, or C, 88? Father, if you don't know this, I'll let you off. This is another religion, sir. So you're allowed to guess on this one.
It's a multi-faith pilgrim quiz.
Well, listen, and I appreciate that. I appreciate, but you know, Father William here has kind of committed his spiritual eggs all to one basket, and that's the basket of Christianity. So, if we're doing Shinto all of a sudden, yeah, I can give him a pass if he gets this one wrong. But again,
no baseball questions, I can tell you now.
Pilgrim routes. How many temples feature along the route of the temple circuit in Japan? Is it A, 66, B, 77, or C, 88? Again, still the theme of pilgrim routes. Which two Norwegian cities are joined by St. Olaf's Way or the Old King's Route pilgrimage? Is it A, Stavanger to Fredrikstad? Is it B, Oslo to Trondheim? Or C, Bergen and Kristianstad? These are hard this month. Which two Norwegian cities are joined by the St. Olaf's Way or the Old King's Route pilgrimage? Is it A, Stavanger to Fredrikstad?
B, Oslo to Trondheim, or C, Bergen to Kristianstad. And just whilst we're here, there's a wonderful podcast called The Second Decade, which looks at the second decade of the 19th century. And I just listened to this last week about Norway and the independence of Norway, or at least the transference of Norway from Denmark to Sweden, and what happened in between. Utterly fascinating, really great podcast if you're interested in the early 19th century. Again, pilgrim routes. How long is the Bunyan Trail, which celebrates the locations of John Bunyan's The Pilgrim's Progress and passes through Clapham, where Claire lives? Is it 66 miles, 86 miles, or 96 miles? So here we go. How long is the Bunyan Trail, which celebrates locations in John Bunyan's The Pilgrim's Progress, which also passes through Clapham in Bedfordshire, not London, where our Claire lives? Is it A, 66 miles? Is it B, 86 miles? Or is it C, 96 miles? Last one of these fiendishly hard questions before we go on to ones which I was a little bit more confident on. Celebrating dogs. Which dog is named after this region in Croatia? Now, if you know your geography and if you're listening, a region of Croatia is named after a specific breed of dog. Which one is it? What dog is named after this region, or for our listeners, a region of the northwest coast of Canada? So what dog is named after a region on the northeast coast of Canada?
Oh, it is the northeast. Apologies.
Yeah. Which was also one of the last places to become part of the Dominion of Canada. Only became part of Canada in 1948, as I seem to remember, which was a surprise to me. It was still a crown colony up until that point. Again, celebrating dogs. Which dog was named after a state in Mexico? And if you're watching on Zoom, you'll see it in red. So what dog is named after a state or this area in Mexico? And then the last question. What dog is named after an area which is now divided between Germany and Poland? Back before 1945, this was solely part of Germany and it straddles the Baltic coast, but now is split between Poland and Germany. So what dog is named after this area? Answers at the end of the show. Now, Claire, what's been happening on the socials?
So it's been a bit quieter on the socials, although the numbers in the Facebook group keep growing. So we welcome everyone who joins that group. We've had various people showing off their map-related Christmas presents in the Facebook group. I got a map. In fact, I got the same map as Paula Formby, and Ian and Glyn both got map jigsaws, which, as you'll recall from an earlier map fact, jigsaws were first done to teach people geography by having maps on them. So that's all circular, all falls back. Some really great maps from Simon Evans, who posted a link around the National Atlas of the United States, which was published in the 1970s and has hundreds of maps which sort of set out a sort of unifying kind of approach to thinking about the United States. And there was some really great stuff in there. That's been some of the sort of fun stuff on the Facebook group. A lot of chat around where people have been posting the things. So keep them coming. Twitter's been quieter. It's mainly been me and my map fact of the month, one of my tweets on the hashtag map corner. So I'm going to hold that back for the end of the show.
Oh, all right. I thought we kind of almost were at the end of the show. What am I missing, Claire?
Oh, well, I think we need to do the answer to the quiz, don't we?
Well, sure, we need to like build up tension. I know Nick Rowworth likes a bit of tension, don't you, Nick? You in particular. You like a metaphorical and actual drum roll. Father, before we come on to the answers for the quiz, how long did it take you to write the book?
Well, I have another full-time job in that I'm a parish priest, so I write when I can.
Sorry, you know, when you said you had another one, I thought, bloody hell, aren't you supposed to be a priest? But no, that isn't.
So I basically carve out some time each summer. This book, you know, once I got into it, the stories really wrote themselves. The memories were fresh, and I basically wrote maybe the first third of the book a summer ago, and then I wrote the last two thirds of the book this past summer. And with any book, there are a lot of revisions and edits and so forth, but I had a great team helping me. And so we finally wrapped it up in October.
Have you had a lockdown this year? Because I'm just thinking this would be a really great way of traveling vicariously.
Yeah, this has been a good period of time for people to travel through books and videos. And it has been interesting. I've heard from people all over who've read this book, and it's been fun to connect with people. So,
Claire, I think enough tension has been built so we can actually now have these answers. One answer I've already given everybody, if you were watching with eagle eyes. So question number one, pilgrim routes. What is the most popular route on the Camino de Santiago, which finishes at Santiago de Compostela in España? It was A, the French Way. I took it you knew that one, Father.
I did. I actually got that one right. I can't believe it.
All right. Smashing. Question number two, pilgrim routes. How many temples feature along the route of the temple circuit in Japan? It's C, 88. If there's anybody who actually knew that, props to you.
Oh, wow.
Number three, which two Norwegian cities are joined by the St. Olaf's Way or the Old King's Route pilgrimage? It's B, Oslo to Trondheim. That is quite a trek. Because Trondheim's all the way up north, isn't it? So that's a schlep, a proper schlep. How long is the Bunyan Trail, which celebrates locations in John Bunyan's The Pilgrim's Progress and passes through our Clare's Clapham? It's 86 miles.
Father Bill, if you ever find yourself in Bedford, the UK, and you want to follow in the footsteps of John Bunyan, who's one of our most famous residents, then I'll take you to the Bunyan Museum, and I won't walk our 86 miles, but we can do some of the Bunyan Trail.
Very good.
What dog is named after this region in Croatia? Now, I was on solid ground here. Fiona Power just slapped her forehead. She got this one. How could you get this one wrong, Fiona? This is easy. Of course, it's a Dalmatian dog. Dalmatian dog. Next answer. What dog is named after a region of the northeast coast of Canada? It's a Labrador, of course. Next answer. What dog is named after a state in Mexico? A Chihuahua. Of course, the famous Mexican state of Chihuahua. And then our last one. What dog is named after a region on the Baltic coast, which is split between Germany and Poland? It's a Pomeranian. It's Pomerania. Of course, Fiona, come on. How the heck did you not know that? You're like, ooh. Right, so we stop the share. We go on to gallery view. And I say, right, who only got one of those wrong? I'm not going to say, there's no way everybody got all of those right. Right, hold your hand up if you only got two wrong.
Yay, Ken McDonald.
Ken McDonald. Ken, seriously, you're going to have to unmute yourself here. Were these inspired guesses, or did you actually know a lot of these answers?
Well, of course, you gave us one, number four. Everything else, well, the dogs I knew, except the last one. I mean, Dalmatian, Labrador, and Retriever, and Chihuahua were all pretty easy. I did not know the Pomeranian. And then the others were just guesses.
Well, you guess well, sir.
I seem to have something spiritual about the city of Trondheim, but I can't remember what it was, so I was educated.
Most spiritual journey for me, because I must admit, Father, I'm not really a Christian. I'm not. Go to the Hagia Sophia in Istanbul, and I defy anybody to walk into that building, and you know that it's 1,500 years old, and it's that big, and look at that dome. You feel like something's touching you, whether it's God, whether it's Allah, I don't know. I was like, woohoo. That is some impressive bit of human ingenuity as a temple to a higher and a spiritual being. Hagia Sophia, I was just like utterly amazing. And that was just a beautiful thing. Ken McDonald, you know what you win, don't you, Ken? But I think...
Well, I've already won it last time, didn't I? So I'm still working on my audio postcard.
Sarah Spilsbury, lovely to see you over there in Smethwick, next to my hometown in Birmingham. Right, folks, I think it's almost time for us to fold up our maps. But before we do, Claire Asprey is going to hit us with an amazing map fact of the month.
Okay. And this one, I got courtesy of a tweet from our friend of the show, Simon Kustenmacher. And it's the fact that Mount Etna in Sicily is the world's only deci point, which is where 10 administrative areas all meet at one single point. So there are kind of 10 administrative areas around that they all meet at the peak of Mount Etna. So I'm a bit of a local government boundaries nerd myself. That was right up my street. And I love a bit of local government boundary talk. So that's why that was my favourite one this month.
You must be an interesting person at a cocktail party, Claire, I tell you. Right, us map people, we struggle with enthusing people about our passion, but you take it one step further. There's only one place in America which has four states which join, which I think is New Mexico, Arizona. Are you nodding your head there, Ken? You're going, yeah. Unmute yourself. And I remember reading about this and somebody said that mathematically, this is so unlikely that this can only really happen like once in the world. But like, there's a place in Sicily where there's 10 administrative boundaries at all times. So what are those states which all join?
There would have to be Arizona, Nevada, Utah, and Colorado. New Mexico.
There you go. I wasn't going to check, and you are gospel on these things. Hey, you see what I did there, Father? I said it was gospel. Hey,
I see what you did there.
You're fallible, Ken. You made a mistake.
No. There's a similar place. There's a point where four counties meet. I think it's Leicestershire, Staffordshire, Warwickshire, and Northamptonshire, possibly. I used to drive through it when I went to visit my friend who lived in Leicestershire, but there's a point where four counties boundary, like just on a point together.
Well, there you go, folks. The things you learn on Map Corner. Stunning facts. Where Claire has travelled through. Right, so I think we can officially fold up our maps, but just before we do, Claire, who do we have on next month?
I can't remember, but we're definitely recording on the 6th of February. We will see you then.
Yes, international travel will not mean that I will postpone this, folks. So there you go. Another fantastic edition of Map Corner done live. And you know what? They're going to have to go some way to beat our Father William, aren't they? Whoever's on next.
Absolutely. Great guest.
You're a hard act to follow, Father.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Take care, everybody. We'll see you all again soon. I'm going to fold up my map.